To CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, British Columbia, broadcasting from the unceded territories of the Coast Salish peoples. Find us online at cjsf.ca and on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and SoundCloud.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Canadian Philosophy Show. My name is Michael Robert Kaditz, and I am with Tegan Marshall, Hale Rothery, and Aaron Wang. I am forever researching and developing my ideas about free will. Whether we have it, why is it important or not important, what are the problems with free will, and how can we understand, human behavior or behavior of any living thing, for example, with respect to free will. So first, in my logical sequence here that I've prepared, I want to take the time just to briefly discuss and get everyone on the panel's idea, whoever wants to contribute a little bit, about what is free will. So I'm going to start by suggesting that free will involves, perhaps among other things, but it certainly entails an ability for an entity to act otherwise than that entity has acted or will act. So I say entity because I don't want to start out at the starting gate by assuming that only people are candidates for free will, because someone might argue that other life forms have free will also. But anyway, so we'll say an entity comes to decision points and has the ability to act one way or another way or perhaps another way. And maybe there's a little more to it than that. There's a mechanism within those entities which use some criteria to make a decision. And that decision could have been something different if that entity had chosen of its own volition, unencumbered by some external force, that there's some mechanism within that entity which allows it to independently choose A or B or C or D or E, and having made a decision, might have chosen or could have chosen otherwise. So I'm wondering if anyone here on the panel would like to add anything or subtract anything or make comments on my very brief definition of what free will is.
I think there's an interesting ancient Greek example of the horse and the rider. So you have essentially the emotional self and the rational self. And the idea is that these two things are in conflict with each other. So you were speaking about choosing otherwise, and I guess my comeback to that is otherwise compared to what? So if we have one set of base instincts, emotional instincts, and we have another set of reasoning instincts, so to speak, as the dynamic is usually talked about. I don't know if that's fairly accurate in terms of philosophical terms, but that's kind of the common way we would think about it, is we would have emotional and reasoning processes that are in conflict with each other. I actually think that's a problematic way to think about it, but I think those are the two things we talk about when we talk about free will.
I'm pretty sympathetic to a kind of determinism, because I don't see people as isolated agents. I think that, like, at least a very strict form of free will, like you might call it its purest form, requires some sort of soul-like free agent entity that can completely separate itself from its worldly circumstances to make decisions completely independently. And I just don't see that making a whole lot of sense. However, on a more, I guess what I'd call subjective level, I can see, or you might even use the term phenomenological, it's obvious, at least to me, from my own experience, which is somewhat anecdotal, that it seems as if we really do have free will. Like, free will really seems like a real thing. And it's also a concept and understanding that's very helpful for us to understand things like language and morality and character, concepts that would, I think, really struggle if we held everything to be completely deterministic in that concept's purest forms.
I stand firmly on free will's side. Partially, as Hale has said, there definitely is factors in the world that we see shaping people and shaping their responses to things. There's also countless examples of people like myself coming from very challenging circumstances and utilizing opportunities that they've had to choose differently. So I don't think the fact that you've had a different, let's say, social experience means that you were naturally determined to take a completely different choice than perhaps the environment you were raised in. I could still have choose to isolate myself and actually fall more in line with the experiences of my upbringing. So Michael knows this, that it's going to be a fierce debate between he and I on this position.
Determinism was mentioned. So since we define free will, let me just briefly define what I think determinism refers to. So determinism, contrary to free will, suggests that an entity behaves in such a way that no other behavior was possible, that there's no choice involved, that there's no juncture where an entity or a person, that entity is a person, could have done otherwise. So determinism suggests that it is predetermined, or if not predetermined, at least determined by any given set of facts at any given moment. It's determined what the behavior or the response or the next action will be, which I guess is saying that behavior is predetermined by the previous set of circumstances. So that's determinism, that there's no choice involved, that my speaking right now was predetermined. I'm not, as I go along, deciding what I'm going to say, but rather it's already determined. It's already in the cards. I could not have said anything otherwise. I could not be sitting in a different position in my chair. I could not be wearing different clothes. I could not have done anything different than been hosting the Canadian Philosophy Show tonight. Even though I might think I might have chosen different, I actually could not have. So that's my understanding of determinism. And with respect to some of the things you raised, in particular, Hale, about why is it important that we have free will, I am going to get to that. I have that in my outline here, which is actually next, to talk about why is free will important? Why is it important for us to believe? So many people believe. I know some people don't believe. Many of us do believe we have free will. And many people who aren't sure believe that we have some kind of free will, maybe not complete free will. But the point, I think, is that there's a high cost to denying free will. So that's the approach I'm going to take in this part of my outline. What would be the cost? What would be the consequences? What are the consequences of asserting that everything that we do as humans is predetermined, that we have no choice, we have no free will? And I'm not for a moment going to pretend like there are no costs. I'm not going to pretend, even though I think some of you know, and you know correctly, that I am very skeptical that we have free will, I am not going to dismiss the position that we have free will as being nonsensical or being unjustifiable. I think it's very justifiable to claim we have free will, because the cost of asserting, or the cost if we don't have free will, is quite high. And I wanted to go over some of the things we would be giving up if we don't have free will. What are some of the things that we take for granted that we would be giving up, and that would be very difficult to explain if we do not have free will? Because I think that each of these costs or consequences of not having free will need to be addressed if someone is going to argue that we don't have free will, as I really am going to do to let you know. So I'll go over a few that I have in my notes, and I'll see if you guys want to jump in with any other costs of not having free will, consequences of not having free will. Or to put it conversely, why is it important that we have free will? So, and you guys already touched on some of them, but I'll go over them again. So the first one that I'm thinking is that it's just, in a non-technical sense, it seems like, what's the point? What would be the point of of making decisions at all if everything's predetermined? When I go sit down at a restaurant and I have a menu in front of me and the server comes and says, well, what do you want? I normally have looked, you know, at the choices on the menu, made a decision, and I tell the server what I want. I don't say, well, I don't know. Whatever you bring, you're going to bring. It's predetermined. So what's the point of me deciding? That would obviously be quite disruptive to the food ordering process at a restaurant. And likewise, it, you know, in any number of situations, when I get online to register for classes, I have to go down the list of available classes and make what seems like a decision which classes for which to register. I don't just say, well, I'm not going to bother registering because if it's meant to be, since it's predetermined, I'm just going to show up in the classes that, you know, that I was predetermined to show up in. Doesn't seem like it would really work. So that's one of the, and then sort of also from a psychological, emotional point, like what's the point of even living if everything's a script, if I'm just playing out a script, what's the meaning of my life? What's the meaning? That's sort of an existentialist question, Tig. And I know you're into existentialism. What would be the point of taking responsibility for my freedom as a human being if I have no freedom, right? If I have no freedom and have no choice, what's the point? Another thing that we would be giving up if we were to not have free will would be the idea of praiseworthiness or blameworthiness for our actions. How could I be held responsible or blameworthy for actions such as harming somebody, for breaking the law, for stealing, any number of proscribed actions, morally and legally proscribed actions, if my behavior is predetermined? How could I be blamed for something I have no control over? And conversely, how could I be praised for something I have no control over? So it seems very important to the idea of what's sometimes called just desserts, the idea that, that if I do something blameworthy, then I will be punished. So this ties into crime and punishment, to the premise behind our legal system, our judicial system. It seems premised upon the idea that people have a choice, they have free will, and if they choose to do something wrong or illegal, then there will be consequences. If they choose to obey the law, either moral law or civil law or criminal law, then they will be credited and may get, at least won't be blamed, and certainly may reap benefits from doing that. So praiseworthiness and blameworthiness seem quite dependent on the idea of free choice. And I'll name another one which is related to this, which is now going back to medieval philosophy a little bit. It was very important for the medievals, for the theologians and the medieval philosophers, to assert that humans have free will. Why? Well, one of them was for praiseworthiness and blameworthiness, but another was to prove one's love of God. So one proves his or her love of God by the fact that he or she is not obligated to love God, could have chosen otherwise. So the love of God and doing moral versus immoral acts are praiseworthy precisely because they're not predetermined, precisely because a human might have chosen otherwise, might have chosen not to love God, not to respect God, not to obey God. So these are all interrelated, and they all seem to be dependent on this notion that human beings have a internal mechanism which could choose one way or could choose another way, and based upon which choice this internal mechanism within a human exercises, then there will be consequences as a result of that. All of that stuff seems to become at best problematic and at worst completely moot if human behavior is predetermined if there's no choice involved. One more point I wanted to make is that Aristotle, of course, and other great philosophers, classical philosophers, talked about what makes a human unique, what makes a human human. One of the, if not the central property of a living thing, which makes it human, is its ability to think rationally, is the rationality. Humans have, according to some of our great philosophers, have a unique property of rationality. And that is tied in with the idea of free will. So we use our rational minds, the claim goes, to weigh various sides, to weigh one decision versus another decision, and then we use our free will to then implement the decision that we've arrived at through rational discussion with ourselves. And that supposedly unique property of humans becomes quite problematic if we were to assert we don't have free will. Then how does rationality work if we have no will with which to implement a rational analysis that we've made? Seems like rationality is quite perhaps inexorably tied in with the idea to act upon our rationality. So we would have to least likely or possibly have to throw out this whole uniqueness of human beings as being rational creatures who make choice if we were to give up free will. So I'll pause in case there's any other ideas about what we would be giving up, or conversely, why it is important to assert that and to believe that people have free will.
So I'm going to jump in here and say something that I think is in line with determinism. So one of the things that I like to say from time to time is that the world as it exists today is the product of all of the decisions of all of the people who have ever lived throughout human history. Now, it's also the product of many other things, but that's one thing that it's the product of. Everyone's decisions throughout history have had impacts on the people who exist today. Most importantly, most obviously, through the children that they had, have become the parents and then the creators of the next generation and so on and so on. So why do I bring that up? I bring that up because that, in a sense, is deterministic. It's very deterministic. The worlds that we live in, the societies we live in, are the products of hundreds of thousands, millions, and sometimes billions of people. So individuals don't necessarily have control. You might say no one has control over these large systems. But then I think that also kind of misses the point, is that each individual life on this planet intersects and crosses every other life in unexpected and interesting ways, and so that the results of those actions are not immediately obvious or easy to predict. And this is the challenge of history, is that there's no sense of scale in history, that people who you might have thought in their day were completely irrelevant later become incredibly important because of their writings in later generations. You could say that very clearly about many philosophers. Socrates in his day, I'm sure very many people would not have thought very interesting or very influential, but now he's, you could say, one of the most influential philosophers of all time. So I say that to kind of highlight that even if you are living out a role that is predetermined by your lot in life, that doesn't mean that it's necessarily insignificant. Your role could be very, very significant to the world as it exists, even if it is predetermined.
You know, when it comes to the costs of denying free will, I'm acutely aware that coming from that position, which I fully admit is partly my position, at least, is a bit of a logical fallacy. It's a bit of arguing from the consequent. In the fact that you know, whether it be issues around moral responsibility or what becomes of how we understand rationality, etc. Those things, us feeling like we lose those things or lose those concepts, don't actually have any bearing on whether or not free will is deterministic or not. It's just one of those things that's really unfortunate, because it's like a very obvious problem in that kind of argument, but yet it's so hard to let go of. And so I'm really interested to see where you'll go with that.
That's a great point, Hale. There is a logical fallacy. Perhaps there is. I think there's another way to view it, but I think it's a justifiable position that it's a logical fallacy to say that something exists because the consequences of it not existing would be dire. If it doesn't exist, it doesn't exist, and we have to accept the consequences. We can't say, well, free will must exist because if it didn't, we'd be in trouble. We don't want to endure the consequences of there being no free will, so let's just stipulate that we have free will. And more than stipulate it, let's actually argue that we have free will, because if we didn't, things would be terrible, and we'd have to let go of all these assumptions that we make. So I agree with you. That's a logical fallacy to do that. The question of whether free will exists must stand on its own, not on what the consequences would be if there weren't free will. That's one way to look at it. So I do want to acknowledge that. And I think it's a very good argument, Hale, a very good argument, not against free will per se, but it's an argument against using the consequences of there being no free will as evidence that there's not free will. So I want to talk about now, why is there a problem here that we're even, you know, running up against? Why can't we just leave it at that? That obviously we have free will. The world as we know it would be turned upside down if we didn't. Why can't we just leave it at that and say we have free will and let it go? What's the problem with asserting free will? Why can't we, even if it's a logical fallacy, why can't we just say, well, everything that we know, everything we assume, everything we experience suggests that we have free will?
Well,
why can't we do that? Why is there a problem at all? And I'll elaborate on that, but go ahead, Tegan.
I'm going to pose a very intensely pro-free will, slightly metaphysical argument of origin here to suggest that the idea that we have free will is so innate within us that to say that there isn't one is not just contradictory societally, it's actually just contradictory to how humans operate. The fact that we, and we've talked about this on the show before, the fact, just as Michael stated off the top, the fact that I can look at a menu and systematically be like, well, don't really want that, don't really want that. I do want that, though, so I choose that, right? There's something innate within our cognitive processes that at least give us the illusion of free will. And I would say it's so innate to us. So if I am proven wrong and there is no free will, it's really this question of, okay, who am I then? Because if I haven't made particular choices, I kind of have to go back and rewrite my autobiography real quick and say, this means nothing.
Yes, you're elaborating on a couple points there. The question of what would be the consequence of not having free will, because you just raised the issue of, what's the point? What's my life about? But you've also made an affirmative argument why we do have free will, which is that's our experience. That seems to be this obvious, innate, intuitive experience we have. You sit down at a restaurant and you look at the menu and you say yes, yes, or no, 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 yes. And so I think this now follows up on our point, Hale. It's the argument for free will is more than just the terrible consequences of not having free will, but there's also affirmative arguments for free will, such as that's our experience. It seems quite obvious in our experience that we are constantly making choices and we could have done otherwise. So I think that's an argument to be, you know, give credit to arguments for free will. That's one of them. Our experience counts for something, right? We have firsthand knowledge of making choices. So what's the problem here? Why can't we leave it at that? Why aren't we done and just stipulate that we have free will? Well, Free will has run into a problem because of science. Because the more that the human race has learned about science and physics and the laws of motion, the movement of planets and so on over the last few hundred years since the scientific revolution, we have discovered a determinism in the physical world. So what we've discovered is that if we were to know the full set of circumstances that exist at a given time, for example, the position of planets, gravitational weight, mass of planets and other bodies, the trajectories of those bodies, the velocity of those bodies, then we can actually compute, using mathematics, we can compute what the next position will be, what the trajectories will be, what time the arrival or the collision or the landing or whatever you want to say. If you drop, you know, if you drop an object, we know what the free fall rate is. We know when that object will hit the ground. If we might have to figure in wind resistance and things like that. But that all can be computed. It's determined. It's not willy-nilly. There's no free will involved. Indisputably, there's no free will involved when you drop a rock off of a 20-story building. The rock doesn't have free will. So why do people have free will? Are not people simply physical objects too? Free will seems to be contrary to the idea that physical objects behave deterministically, and the behavior of those objects can be computed mathematically if a scientist knows the full set of circumstances, all the properties of the various objects and so on that exist at a given moment in time. So it would seem that to argue that people have free will would put them outside of the laws of physics, outside of the physical world. And that's a big problem for science, which is a closed system, meaning that science, as normally understood, doesn't allow for supernatural behavior, supernatural phenomena that don't adhere to the laws of physics. Science, it seems, is a complete description of the physical world. Not that science knows everything, not that science has discovered everything or is correct about everything, but is certainly based on the premise that nothing escapes or exists or behaves outside of the physical world, even if we don't fully understand the physical world yet. So what that does is it seems to put free will outside of the closed physical scientific world, in that closed physical scientific world is deterministic, in that there's no gap between cause and effect. For a set of cause or for a causal set, there is a determined effect. If I throw a rock toward the window, and if I were to measure all the parameters involved, the mass, the force, the trajectory and all that, the velocity, then I can predict exactly what will happen and when to that window. I'd have to know the properties of the window and so on. So it seems at first glance that believing in free will is antithetical to believing in science, because you would have to explain how there's this room for a willing mechanism which makes choices to exist in a physical world. Now, there's been attempts to do that. I'll briefly just mention a couple of them, just so I'm not ignoring a couple important things, but I don't have time to go into them in great detail. One attempt that's been made over the decades is generally called compatibilism, which has various flavors and various angles and various ways of, you know, approaching the problem. But suffice it to say, at the moment, that many very well-respected philosophers have and continue